On the eve of battle, a soldier checks his kit. One Ward machine pistol, cleaned, oiled. Face blacked, balaclava on, jacket zipped tight. In my pockets, chocolate, 3 bars, cheese, 1/2 pound, and loose raisins. Combat rations for 5 days. My boots laced tight, knotted. Knotted twice for luck. I am ready. Say your prayers, Terry Prince. Remember Oliver at Master Moor, singing his psalms, rousing his Englishmen. Let God arise and scattered let all his enemies be, and let all those that do him hate before his presence flee. A noise. I slide into darkness. A figure moves into the moonlight.
Thompson. Yes, sir.
Are you reading me?
I am reading you, sir.
Have you found Prince?
It's very difficult to find him, sir, when you keep calling me on the radio.
It's 21:30. Operation still planned for 2300 hours.
I am well aware of that.
Start moving the men up to the swimming pool.
Sir?
Just do it.
Cheers you up when you know your enemies have difficulties too. Grumbling to himself, the figure moves off through the wood towards the swimming pool. I follow.
Can I talk to you?
Oh, yes, that would be lovely.
What do you drink?
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh,
it's
Jim. Fortescue. You enjoyed the meal. Beautifully cooked, exquisitely served, James, as always. Who could have guessed what had gone on before?
I beg your pardon?
It's very English, isn't it?
What?
You've been at my throat all day interrogating me. Then the dinner bell rings, we all troop out, don our dinner jackets, and suddenly we're the best of friends. How close do you think you've come to breaking me, speaking as a professional?
Never talk shop in the mess, will you?
Hypocrisy, Sir James. It's an older phrase to describe this time-honored technique. A good old one, too. Give him the hard treatment, then the soft, then the hard. Then...
Willie, you're shaking. You're my guest.
You're a prisoner.
Gentlemen talk business during the day. They relax at night.
Beautiful roses, these, in your vase?
Ah, my neighbor had them cut for me from his garden. Sent that young gardener over with them this afternoon.
Blood red.
Rather large and vulgar, I find them, to tell the truth, like most modern roses.
That young gardener from next door.
Yes?
I was just taking the evening air outside. Saw him down by the swimming pool again.
Oh?
Splashing about, displaying himself to his best advantage.
I see.
Another drink, Sir James?
No, Willie. I really think I should be...
Oh. What?
That's Miss Taylor.
Linda?
Yes, she appears to be coming in our direction. Did you notice her at dinner?
I found it very difficult to keep my eyes off her.
Refused to leave the table when the port started round.
You did hand it round the correct way, though, Sir James. You can't falter on that.
It's the principle, Willie, the principle. Excuse me just a moment, will you?
Of course, Sir James.
Willie.
Linda, you look ravishing.
Where did Sir James go in such a hurry?
He said something needed seeing to.
Sounds ominous.
Well, we must all find our particular pleasures in our own peculiar ways. I hope you and I are going to find a little time for a little punting sometime this weekend.
I find you quite extraordinary, Willie.
Oh, really?
Here you are, fighting for your life in the interrogation room, but still hankering after a little hanky-panky and a punt.
Hanky-panky and a punt? What an evocative phrase. How about it, as the saying goes?
Here, Willie, have another drink.
Why not, Linda? The night is young, and your lips are blood red.
Work your way up, Terry. Right to the edge of the light, but don't lose the shadow from that branch. There. Now let's see what's to be seen. Stick your head up, slow. One swimming pool floodlit. A lone figure swimming lazy up and down, loving their body. 11:01. Hold your bottle, Terry, lad. Screw it down tight. What's that? By that tree across the pool. Company. And all I've got to do is swan out there into the limelight and start asking our distinguished guest a few casual questions. You should have stuck to fruit machines, Terry.
Hello?
Hell.
Hello?
Bang on time. Patty comes like the catastrophe in the old comedy. Tall man, quite portly, fine grey hair turning white.
Oh, there you are.
My eyes shoot to the figure in the pool. Slim, boy-like, like Chris said, but when it breaches, stands full in the shallow end, water cascades off her two full, luscious breasts.
Told you I never wear a swimming costume, Willie. Coming in.
The man hurries towards the edge, greedily, starting to undress, his foot snagging in his trouser leg. Come on, Terry, move. I rise, blunder towards him in the blinding floodlights.
Sir, excuse me.
Yes? What do you want?
I've got to talk to you, Sir James.
Sir James? Sir James is in the house. My name is Fortescue.
A gun cracks. The girl screams. I dive for the trees. Bullets ripping round me. Fortescue staggers slow, wonderingly towards the pool, hands fingering his bloody shirt. He pauses an eternity and falls. I run blindly through the woods, three men after me. The nearest I shoot, that keeps the others back. At first I run away from the house, then stop, hide, let them pass me blundering by. I start to make my cautious way back. I have nowhere else to go. Now I know my quarry. Sir James Simpson, a name to hate. I find a place to wait for morning, an old boathouse at the foot of the lawns, inside a punt floating on the water. I lie down, hide beneath a tarpaulin in the stern. Like a fool, I fall asleep. It is summer, hot summer in Margate. Hands and clothes sticky with toffee and rot. Face and body chat with sunburn. Me and Mum sitting on the crowded shore. Me digging castles. Mum sitting there silent, smiling. Eating our sandwiches, she drinking her stout. Sleeping sometimes in the summer sun. All I have ever wanted, a kingdom entire. And then sometimes in late afternoon, after she's slept off her lunch, she dances round inside a ragged towel, struggling into Aunt Sarah's swimming costume. Then Mum and me go into the white, lazy sea. At first I cling to her, wiry thin limbs panicking around her soft body, and she lowers me gently but firmly, still holding me, commits me to the deep, the glassy sea. She and me all alone in the milk-warm sea. The endless tide and motions of an infinite ocean.
Jimmy! Jimmy! What's wrong with my roses? So they're big! So's the Taj Mahal!
Many on a summer's morning. Looking over my fence into my dear neighbor's garden, it's just that I prefer more subtle blooms to meet my eyes.
Life is big. What, you scared of it?
Never.
You educated bigwigs. You're so understated, half-hearted. You don't eat life. You nibble it.
Manny, I liked your roses very much. I gave them pride of place in the morning room. It's just
you don't never go in the morning room. I know. You English. I think you liked your nannies too much when they used to take your trousers down and beat you, eh?
Oh, well, we all like naughty boys sometimes, don't we? The sweet wand of you. Ah, lovely time of day, this. First light. All the world cloaked in grey. Mm. Remember, Manny?
Yes, James, I remember. Another time, another place. Hmm. So, the punt's in the boathouse?
It is.
After you.
I start awake. I should move fast, but I'm wrapped in dreams of Mother. I cower beneath the tarpaulin.
Careful getting into the punk now, Jimmy. We don't want no accidents now, do we?
My old back.
There. Right, all comfortable. You've got the blanket over your legs.
Yes.
And your gun underneath it, trained on our young friend underneath that tarpaulin.
Indeed I have. No tricks, Mr. Prince, understand. Firstly, very slowly, push your machine pistol over the side of the boat. Drop it in the water. Do it, or I shoot. Now, out from under that tarpaulin.
Slowly, Prince. One wrong move and you're gone.
You will see the punt pole beside you on the landing stage. You don't look like an experienced punter, but a pistol pointing at the belly concentrates the mind wonderfully. The three of us are going on a little voyage of discovery.
Out into the black, black waters of Lethe.
Silent, we slip through the grey sleeping world down the misty Thames. Me, struggling with the clumsy pole. The two old men, conspiratorial, huddled in the bow, nattering ferocious as ferrets. Suddenly there is company, chance of rescue. Three punts moored unsteadily to the bank, filled with Hooray Henrys and Henriettas, awash with champagne, braying and bellowing out across the water. Breaking all social rules, not even wearing a bow tie. I might have joined them had I not been unavoidably detained. Instead, they slipped drunkenly past, the banks littered with unfrocked Debs, their dresses around their necks, and chubby buttocks bouncing up and down.
It's filthy. Filthy. Look at it.
Disgusting.
They're undergraduates. The future leaders of our nation, meant to behave creditably, set an example.
Animals.
They slowly fade astern, champagne corks popping as the river bears us on.
Never happened in my day. To start with, women weren't allowed near the place. Not that we didn't have friends.
But they weren't women.
If you liked him, all very well. You might take him for a gentle ride in a punt, read him sonnets of Petrarch or Shelley, watch his hair golden in the sunlight, and then return to your rooms where what took place was beautiful, private. But that rank, open copulation like animals, never. It's anarchy.
Bestiality. Nothing more, nothing less. They were like animals.
Look, over there, where we're passing now. Parsons Pleasure, the university bathing club.
Yeah, yeah.
It's private, secluded. When I was an undergraduate, I could lie on the grass there, reading Plato, discussing the finer points of Virgil with a friend. And about me, naked in the sun, would lie cabinet ministers, high churchmen, dons, maharajas, all friends, all men of great power and consequence. Calm, cool, ruling the world with certainty, refinement, and it worked. The world was led. Civilization was upheld. But now...
anarchy.
Pandemonium. Everyone snatching the tiller, shrieking for attention.
Is this a private slanging match, or can anyone join in?
Watch your tongue, Terry.
You know my name?
Of course I do. I know the last time you washed your socks.
Feel free to join in, Mr. Prince. Mr. Silverman and I regard this somewhat as a private tutorial for you. You have, after all, performed most creditably. We're filling you in on some of the background details.
Before we kill you.
You said Silverman.
That's right. My companion is Emmanuel Silverman. I am, as you're doubtless aware, Sir James Simpson.
What's an East End villain doing in a punt with some old puff from Oxford?
Watch your lips, son.
You're right, Manny. He is a rough diamond. Mr. Prince, as you say, our alliance seems rather unlikely. Oh, sir. But like this River Thames, there are dark and murky depths. We are both leaders of our respective worlds. Both require loyalty, industry, courage in those we command. Qualities sadly lacking in this modern world.
There's no respect no more.
Quite.
Blacks, junkies, soccer hooligans. Old folks can't walk the streets at night no more. Would never have happened in my day.
Mr. Silverman and I met many years ago.
43.
During the war, at the Soviet embassy.
So that's it. Two bloody Soviet spies.
The conditions we met under are not quite as you imagine.
We were breaking into the embassy at the time. It was the period of the Nazi-Soviet pact. We had reason to believe the Soviets were spying on behalf of their German allies. Our department required the best breaker and enterer in the trade. I made contact with Mr. Silverman. Naturally, I had to go in with him.
A lovely job, man.
Oh, what a night that was, Mr. Prince. I'll never forget. The discipline, the comradeship, the skill, no, the sheer artistry. Emmanuel's thin, wiry body always before me, squeezing through this window, silencing that alarm with the softest of touches. His acute intelligence leading me, guiding me to triumph.
Yeah, yeah.
Such alliances might be permitted in war, but in peace. Manny and I stayed friends, secretly. Two old warriors went to the races, boxing matches, even shared the same bed on occasions, though our relationship has always been largely platonic.
Try saying that to the judge.
Through the years, we have helped each other out.
That's where I came in.
Yeah.
You had worked for both our organizations at different times, Mr. Prince. We merely brought two common structures together. Operation Boudica. We sent you to the magazine office, one of Manny's employers having already shot the editor. We sent Mr. Ionides after you with his doctored gun.
Greek rubbish.
In order to keep you interested in our little project. The young and loud-mouthed Trotskyite Mr. Windham we were able to seduce with almost indecent haste. One whiff of power and he was ours. A quite typical modern undergraduate, I might say. He was silly enough to believe he could manipulate us.
And Sterling. Why did he get the chop?
Another intolerable, ambitious loudmouth, likely to endanger the whole operation with his anti-communist ravings. He was due to be removed anyhow.
And the point of all this bloodshed?
Obvious, isn't it? To get you to the swimming pool on time.
For Fortescue. I'm Fortescue's patsy.
Right, first time.
Not much of your department left, is there, Mr. Simpson?
Call him Sir James. And look at them respectful when you do.
Hardly any, thank God. Unfortunately, one scheming and rather unpleasant young lady used her wits to escape. She presumably will inherit the dung heap. I will leave in disgrace after everything has been blamed on you, Mr. Prince, and my dead subordinates. But then so will my unspeakable minister go back to selling his semi-detached in Guildford. Life has its small and delicate compensations.
And for what? Tell me that, Sir James. Why all this bloodshed? Why slaughter your own department? Tell me that.
Yours is not to reason why. You have been a good, honest foot soldier. Your task is complete.
No.
Yes.
A silence fell. A current was growing, drawing the boat along without my aid. In the distance, a dull roar. It might have been the river. It might have been my anger, darting in my eyes, thundering in my blood.
Which one of you bastards killed my brother?
Your brother was a wally.
That's no reason for killing him.
All he wanted out of life was carpet slippers, tropical fish and a Ford Granada each year.
What's the wrong with that? You ain't done too bad for yourself in your bleeding bungalow.
I fought for it. I risked everything I had. All your schmuck of a brother ever did was ooze his way right up my outfit.
I'll kill you, you filth!
Shoot him! Shoot him!
Gentlemen, calm down. Your brother was shot, Mr. Prince, partly because he might talk to you about Mr. Silverman here.
He never could shut his great mouth, like you, Prince.
And partly to keep your passion smoldering, ensure you arrived at the swimming pool.
You know something? I reckon you two old geezers are potty, cracked, sick, round the bend and down the Kazi. Do you realise the butchering you've done? And for what?
Fortescue. That's for what?
What about Fortescue? What did he do wrong? Wear the wrong bloody tie to the wrong blooming dinner party?
How very perceptive of you about the tie, Mr. Prince. Do you want me to tell you about that traitor?
Jimmy, sit down. You're rocking the boat.
Can I tell you what it's been like in my department this last 20 years with that man? Lose all those undergraduates back there. Copulating like animals. That's my department. That's what he turned it into. A zoo.
No respect, no discipline, not anywhere, no more.
The punt glides round a bend. I stand on the stern, staring ahead. In the distance, the river seems to end in a line of nothingness. Backs to the river, the two men stare up at me, faces blind with hatred.
It wasn't that Fortescue was a communist, a socialist even, oh no. We could have dealt with that. Our department is used to small perversions. He was a liberal, a wet, sloppy, self-righteous liberal. We live in an egalitarian society, he drawled in his best Marlborough accent. Throw open the doors to every ambitious grocer's son, every artisan's child with 3A levels. Blacks, proletarians, women, anyone, provided they're disadvantaged, coarse tongue, second rate. And when I balked him, he'd go behind my back for my ministers, the wet, sloppy ministers of Macmillan, Wilson, Heath, men who cringe before their inferiors.
They're the ones as led the blacks into respectable poor neighborhoods, went soft on crime, led in the muggers.
I see now why the river disappears. It plunges art and soul over a weir. Not daring to look, nodding to their spit-flecked faces, I steer toward it.
All the time, the rot set in. The infighting, backstabbing, empire-building men hungry for semi-detached in Rickman's Worth. I did not command a fighting unit dedicated to defeating my country's enemies. I ran a whorehouse, a pandemonium of greed, treachery, and self-service. And you ask me, Mr. Prince, why William Fortescue, child of Marlborough and Oxford, betrayer of everything that was decent and competent about our society, you ask
but
me...
But the boat starts to rock in the current. Silverman turns and sees...
Jimmy, look, look!
And I declare it war! You have turned my department into a zoo! I said, then fight like animals you are, and may the strongest win!
Silverman grabs his raging companion, forces him to look round as the pump starts to tilt. I dive. Simpson sees, turns, shoots. The bullet catches me in the arm before the river snatches us. The weir swallows all. Old Mother Thames gives, old Mother Thames takes away. As she crushes, smothers me in her embrace, I surrender to her passion. Celtic warrior, naked, childlike in her arms. Everything that should be fulfilled has been. I, a wronged man, have reaped my vengeance, my barren, loveless vengeance. Now there is only death, sleep in dark depths. But the water lightens. The yellows and blues of dawn start to break through the surface. I who should die, borne up by my merciful mother, struggling and unwilling, I break the water's surface, and all the sounds and sights and smells of earth hosanna in my head. I swim slow, painful to the bank, grasp feebly at its edge.
Can I help you?
What?
To get out of the water. Here, give me an arm. You're terribly muddy. There. Oh, you soaked my dress.
Who the hell are you?
Did he shoot you in the arm, Sir James?
I said, who are you?
The midwife, I think you could call me. And I appear to be the only one left to inherit the baby.
What happened to him and that other maniac?
Oh, I suppose their bodies will be washed up in time. And at least one of them will be given an honourable funeral.
I thought I'd escaped.
You have. I have no interest in you. In fact, your presence at any inquest would be positively dangerous. A desultory search will be made for you, which you should be up to escaping. Chris Wyndham was always telling me over the phone about your dreams of living alone on the hills of England. A solitary guerrilla. This is your chance.
Who are you?
The one who reaped the whirlwind. In time, I suppose, I shall finally inherit Sir James's department.
You must be the grocer's daughter.
A bricklayer's, actually. He's a very good man, my father, but not terribly imaginative. He just insisted my education should be better than his. So I worked hard at school, got all my exams, went to Oxford. Suddenly I find myself here, the benefactress of all this. Life is full of surprises.
You can say that again.
Funny, isn't it? How life suddenly thrusts these opportunities on you. An accident of birth.
Yeah, very funny. I'm laughing fit to die.
You won't die, Terry. You're a survivor, like me.
Oh, yeah. And where's the reception committees and the band playing See the Conquering Hero Comes? That's what I'd like to know. The birds and the booze and the free bungalow in Clacton.
I said you're a survivor, Terry, not a victor.
I know. Be thankful for small mercies. Keep your nose clean when you're eating soup and steer clear of steamrollers.
Precisely. You should join the civil service, Terry. Sir James would have no need to worry about his department. I shall run it honourably, efficiently, very efficiently. Well, I'd better be going.
Yeah.
Wish me luck.
And off she walks, the bitch. I don't wish her luck. She doesn't need it. For a while, I just lie, defeated. And slowly, I stagger to my feet. Set off slow across the water meadows to where the downs climb up to heaven. I stumble rough up their great sides, staggering, slipping. A tiny figure black against the rich green grass, following a stream, gushing pure down the white chalk hillside. Now I know old Mother Thames. I've seen her grime and filth in the East End docks, seen her thick, treacherous depths at Oxford. Now I see her source, fresh and bubbling, clear with truth. At last, I stand alone upon the great summit of the hill. All is silence, peace. The first beams of sunrise stalk across the land, the greenness. I look out across England, my England.
That was the final part of Deep Six by John Fletcher. Terry was played by Freddie Lees. Sir James Simpson, Conrad Phillips. Manny, Arnold Diamond. Fortescue, Hubert Rees. Linda Taylor, Madeline Kem. Thompson, John Avineri. And the radio voice, Roger Leach. The programme was directed in Bristol by Brian Miller.